Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are here for you Monday through Friday, and today is the Monday show. Thank you for taking us to work, starting your work week with us, the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Sam Jam Packard, here as Jay King gallivants off at some wedding somewhere, probably, you know, hammered off his ass, being embarrassing as usual. As opposed to me, drunk off my ass, hosting a podcast, embarrassing as usual. I'm only half kidding. We are here to talk about a few things here. The Celtics beat the Charlotte Hornets. Meanwhile, the Cleveland Cavaliers did not beat the Atlanta Hawks. So as we record the show, they and the Cavs are tied for first. We know the Cavs have the tiebreaker, but a couple of games left in the season, and the Celtics have a couple of theoretically easy games left in the season. They played the Brooklyn Nets. They play, well, the Bucks aren't easy, but that's a very winnable game. Meanwhile, the Cleveland Cavaliers have a couple of tough games. They play the Raptors. They play at Miami. Miami playing for their playoff lives. So no guarantee that the Cavs are going to win their last couple of games. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about whether this Celtics season is a success or not, depending on how the playoffs play out. And we're going to talk a little bit about the cap. There's some new information coming out. But let's get started, Sam, on this. Right where the Celtics are right now, they beat the Charlotte Hornets last night. They came back. They blew a 19-point lead. They won the game 121-114. I was there in Charlotte, sitting a couple of rows away from the Celtics bench, watching Isaiah hit clutch threes in my face. It was goddamn awesome. It was so much fun to be in that arena, to hear. I think actually experiencing it, watching the Celtics blow a lead and just be dejected, but then watch them come back and just suck the life out of an arena that had just been re-energized, that was actually a lot of fun. So I know people watching didn't enjoy the Celtics blowing a 19-point lead, but the comeback and being able to turn around and talk smack to all of the Hornets fans that were there, that was a lot of fun for me. So,
yeah, that sounds great. You get all their hopes up and then you just crush them.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
Yeah,
perfect psychological warfare.
Isaiah hit that three, and I turned around and said, "Y'all can go home. It's over. Everybody just go. I'm going to stay till the end, but you guys can just go beat the traffic. It's done. Leave." There were a lot of Celtics fans. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good to see them not, you know, like ideally they would build up a 19-point lead and keep that lead. But with the game, the past two games against the Cavs and the Hawks, who knows what's going on with the Celtics team right now. But to see them kind of bear down and actually, it didn't seem like they panicked in the moment, and they just kind of went out there and executed in the end. Avery Bradley knocked down a couple key jump shots, which I was very excited to see.
Big.
Had some nice plays from Al Horford being aggressive. It was just a nice turnaround game for the team, just in terms of that team performance and everyone kind of contributing. So although you don't like to see them blow a lead, I thought for in general, in aggregate, it was a good effort from the Celtics, especially coming off those last two losses to the Hawks and the Cavaliers.
Yep. And so point one in this podcast is what Isaiah said after the game about what Brad Stevens said and some of what Brad Stevens said after the game. So this was, if you read RedsArmy.com, and I know not all of you do if you're listening to the podcast, but what I wrote Sunday morning on RedsArmy.com was all about figuring it out. And Isaiah Thomas relayed the story of Brad Stevens in the huddle in the midst of the Celtics blowing a 19-point lead, saying, "Hey, guys, you got to figure out how to win this game. We're going to face this adversity in the playoffs. The next few weeks are going to be all about this. So go out there and figure it out. Figure out a way to win." And I personally love that sentiment because it puts a lot of onus on the success and failure on the team. It puts those guys in a position to say, okay, you know what? I have to go out there and figure it out. When you look at a playoff scenario, if they play, say, the Indiana Pacers, you play seven games against the Pacers or however long that series goes. They all know. You know what they're going to call out. They know the plays you're going to call out. They see it. They recognize it. They're all smart. The players, the team that wins a series, they're the ones who say, all right, I see you doing this, but now I'm going to counter it this way. It's very much like a chess match. And so I really do like Brad Stevens saying, you guys have to figure it out. Because no matter what Brad Stevens draws up, it's on Isaiah and Al and Jay and Avery and Amir and whoever the hell else is out there to recognize what's happening on the floor and say, we call this play that we run all the time and it's successful, but they're sniffing it out. It's up to those guys to understand they're sniffing this out, but they're overreacting this way, and we're going to beat them this way. We're going to adjust on the fly on our own by ourselves as players on the floor. We're going to recognize this, and we're going to adjust. And that's nothing a coach can do. That's all up to a player to do it on his own. And so I think a win like this, even over a non-playoff team like the Hornets, they're not far out of the playoffs. That, I think, demonstrates the type of game that they're going to face from now on, moving forward into the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with you, because at this point, everyone knows what they're like. They're going to blitz Isaiah. They're basically going to try and take the ball out of Isaiah's hands. They're going to pack the paint, and the Celtics are going to have to counter to that. And the other part, I think what I like about the coaching strategy is that it kind of throws the gauntlet down in terms of effort, because I feel like part of figuring it out is that it's basically all on your shoulders, and you better play your goddamn ass off, and you better do the little things and the small things on defensive end, just because those are the things that can turn a basketball game. So I also feel like it's kind of a Brad Stevens power move, like, I know I'm great at out of timeout plays, but at the end of the day, you guys have to make the plays on the court, and so it involves both putting together all the effort, and then what you said is like countering what the other team is doing and like putting together the effort and the smart plays to get out there and win the basketball game. And I thought they did a great job of that against Charlotte. And it's not something we saw at all in the Cavs game, maybe a little bit into the second half of the Hawks game, but. You're right. I think that's kind of key in a playoff series. So it's good to see that they're not completely wilting away at the end of the season.
I'm glad you brought up this point, because I brought this up in the morning dump on Reds Army 2, where it's the effort is it's a cliche to say, well, we just wanted it more. But in the playoffs, that actually drifts towards being true. Because the team that hustles just that little bit more for the loose ball, that sets a more precise pick, that boxes out, that closes out without being overly aggressive, or conversely, takes advantage of an overly aggressive closeout and scores or gets a turnover or whatever, any series of things. The team that plays more crisply, more disciplined, that gives you an actual advantage, because a lot of the shit that happens in the regular season does not happen in the playoffs. A lot of times when you turn the ball over and you get a breakaway and you see a defender just peel off and say, whatever, that's a layup. That is not a layup in the playoffs. That becomes, I'm going to take that foul, or I'm going to try to block that shot, or maybe they don't do the things on defense that that led to that in the first place. But the effort has to be there. So I'm glad that you brought it up, because I think that Brad is putting it on his team to say, look, you have to go out there and do it. Just go do it. Don't slack. Don't sit there and say, ah, we got a 19-point lead. We can chill now. Because in the playoffs, no team is just going to give up and say, ah, we're down 19. Screw it. We're done. Game's over. They're fighting for their lives. They're not going to give up. So you can't just give up.
Yeah, it's the key. It's like kind of the frustrating thing about the Celtics this year is that there's been some times where the effort has been lackadaisical, or it just hasn't been there for an entire game. So I think it's going to be definitely something that's key going into the playoffs. And at this point, we don't know who they're going to end up facing in the first round, because with the Cavs losing, the one seed is still up for grabs. So if it's something they can still work on and still playing meaningful games the next two games of the season to kind of finish things off, it's hopefully something they can build on moving towards whoever they play in the first round.
Yeah, let's get into this for a second here, because the Cavaliers have had multiple opportunities to put the Celtics away and to cinch this top seed. They have tried to cinch this top seed, and they have played LeBron James a ton of minutes. And people are giving me shit on Twitter because I'm killing the Cavs. And they're saying, why are you getting on the Cavs? Like, this is good for the Celtics. But I can't get over stupid. I can't get over the Cavaliers being stupid, or any NBA team being stupid. And not that I don't want them to do things that benefit the Celtics. This is great. I love that they're being stupid. I just don't understand why they're being so damn stupid. They went out there tonight and they they lost to the Atlanta Hawks after having what, a 26 point lead? Well, what was the lead that they had?
It was over
20. The Hawks outscored the Cavaliers 44-18 in the fourth quarter. Now, first of all, let's just get into this. Sam, what would the reaction on Twitter be if the Boston Celtics were outscored 44-18 in any quarter?
Oh, it'd be everyone would be lining up to take the trips off the Tobin Bridge. Like, it would be people would be furious. They'd be calling for Al Horford's head. There'd be demands of they have to go out and get a new star. It'd be the worst thing in the world.
Right, that would be the end of the world to be outscored.
It'd be the end of days.
44-18 in any quarter, and not only any quarter, the fourth quarter, to blow a lead and go into overtime, and then lose in OT, that would be the ultimate, the Celtics aren't ready for prime time, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, the Cavaliers now have lost to the Atlanta Hawks twice. Once when the Atlanta Hawks weren't even playing all of their top players. The Atlanta Hawks rested their entire starting five, and the Cavaliers lost. And then the Cavaliers went against the entire Hawks starting five, built up a huge lead and blew it, and still lost. Meanwhile, LeBron James played 47 minutes in this game. What? Like, the Cavaliers have completely mismanaged the end of the season. And it may not matter, but at this point, playing LeBron James 47 minutes in an overtime game, going into the playoffs, what are you doing? What are you doing, Cleveland? Like, do you not understand the big picture here? Like, this is just dumb. And I got shit. I know Matt Moore retweeted me and called me out. I'll double down on it. The Cleveland Cavaliers and Ty Lue are fucking stupid for how they're handling LeBron James, and they're going to pay a price for it in this year's playoffs. Done, period, end of story.
It's like the Cavaliers players and the Cavaliers coaching staff and management aren't seeing eye to eye. It's like if you're going – because the players, that like, in losing back-to-back games to the Hawks are basically like, oh, we're punting the rest of the season. We're waiting for the regular season to come. But then the management is like, no, we want to win these games. Let's play our stars more than 40 minutes. And it's just, you, if you're going to do that, you have to get wins if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers. Because if they had won this game, they basically could have rested the final two. It would have been nothing. They've choked away all these chances to get their players rest. And just, you're right. I don't get why LeBron played 47 minutes tonight. I guess they needed to because they got outscored that much in the fourth quarter, but I don't know. It makes no sense. And if you're a Cavaliers fan, for how well you were like felt after they came into Boston and beat the Celtics like that, to follow it up with two losses against the Hawks, one when giving up this 26-point lead, the other not playing against any of their starters, I don't know. I guess they have to cross their fingers and hope that when it's like the lights are on in the playoffs, they're actually going to play, but this is not what you want to see.
No, and I'll go one more. Kyrie Irving was out because of a knee soreness. The surgically repaired knee was a problem for him. It hurt. And then the first game after all of these stories about how do you handle the pain in your knee, he plays 45 minutes. Okay, he scored 45 points, 44 points and 9 rebounds. That's statistically, I didn't watch the game, so I'm just going by the box score. It's an amazing game. 45 points, 9 assists is an amazing game. But 45 minutes for Kyrie after his knee hurt? Like, are you kidding me? So all this is just leading up to, I think the Cavaliers are screwing themselves. And I think at some point that if they don't feel like they're together at this point, what's going to happen in the playoffs? And if they've played all of these minutes, there's no way these guys are going to be fresh going to the conference finals and the NBA finals. Bringing us back to the Celtics and why this matters and why I even care. And I can't believe the idiocy behind it, but I appreciate and I thank them for it, because the Celtics, if they do get the top seed, that would be amazing. Because not only do they get the 1-8 matchup, they would end up getting the Washington Wizards, because the Wizards have definitely fallen into the fourth seed, pretty much a lock into that fourth seed. And that's the team I think that they want. So the Celtics could get, I think they're going to get Chicago. I've looking at the schedule, I think it's going to be Chicago in the end. I think Chicago is fine. They can get past Chicago. I think they can get past the Wizards. And then, holy shit, they're going to play the Cavaliers. And I know how it went, but the Cavaliers in a month or so, after all of this stuff, if they're not right and if they're not healthy, well, I think the Celtics might have a chance. You know, and I've been saying all along that the Celtics are not an NBA finalist by any stretch, but you know what? If the Cavaliers are being this stupid, I think the Cavaliers could be setting themselves up for a big, big upset and potentially putting Kyrie or LeBron at risk for being either gassed and or hurt for an NBA conference finals.
Well, first the Celtics actually have to get to that number one seed, and even if the Celtics do not control their own destiny in that regard, because they would still need the Cavs to lose one of their two remaining games. First, the Cavs play Miami, playing for their playoff lives, and then on the final night, at the same time the Celtics are playing the Bucks, it's going to be an interesting game between the Raptors and the Cavs, because the Cavs maybe have to win that game to stay in first place. I don't know what exactly the Raptors would be playing for at that point, so who knows, maybe they'll be resting their players, but it's going to come down to the final game of the season, which makes things very exciting for the seeding, and you're right. I think the Celtics really would want that one seed just because what you said, we would get the Wizards in round two, which just seems like a little bit easier at this point just because of their lack of depth. And I don't know. The Raptors are just a very good team with much more experience going into the playoffs. So I think it's huge for the Celtics. I think they have a chance to do it. But if the Cavs lose that first game against the Heat, it's going to be a crazy, crazy Wednesday night for the final day of the season.
Yeah. Well, let's look at this concept here that we've been, or at least I've been seeing. So the Celtics are going to go into the playoffs as probably the one or the two seed. They will be no worse than three. They have at least clinched that. There's a possibility that they can get the third seed, but
They beat the Nets on Monday, then they'll clinch one or two.
They need one more win or one more Raptors loss. Their magic number is one to clinch the second seed. And they could still potentially go into the playoffs as the top seed, as we said. But there is still some talk out there as to what really defines a success for this season. And if the Celtics were to somehow lose in the first round, and I fucking hate this narrative, but it's out there, that the Celtics haven't won in the first round. They haven't won a round, a series, in the Brad Stevens era. Even though the first season that they made the playoffs, they shouldn't have even made the playoffs, and they got swept by the Cavaliers. Like, that's a problem. And then last year, they lost to the Atlanta Hawks in a weird playoff tiebreaker that pushed them from the third seed down to the fifth seed. And they played the Hawks where Isaiah wasn't 100%. Jay Crowder was nowhere near 100%. They lost Kelly Olynyk, and they lost Avery Bradley after one game. And people still sit there and say, well, they haven't won a playoff series yet under Brad Stevens. Like, all Matt, like high and mighty, like, oh, well, they suck. They've been so disappointing. When that is completely not true, we understand that to be not true if you add perspective. But let's entertain this narrative for a second. If after all of this, knowing that the Celtics have the Nets pick, which is the now locked in best odds for the top pick, and knowing that they have cap space, and we'll get to the cap space in a moment, to potentially add a top free agent, does whatever level of playoff success factor into how successful this season is?
I'm going to say, yeah, why not? Because it's the season. I think no matter what, the Celtics were going to finish the year with that Nets pick and cap space, depending on whether they made trades or not. I would just say that in terms of like the trajectory of the franchise, this playoffs doesn't really matter. But in terms of evaluating this season, I absolutely would think that it would be very disappointing for them to, if everyone healthy, to lose a first-round playoff series. So I understand the argument that in the long run, and that it's not like the most meaningful thing, but a completely healthy, a team that's won
over 50 games and would be a top two seed, I would say it would be a disappointment. I wouldn't say the season was an absolute failure, because I think we saw the development of a number of players, but I think it would absolutely be disappointing for them not to get at least past that first round. And actually, I was thinking about this the other day. I think my threshold is they need to get to the game six in the second round for me to be happy. If they lose in six games to either the Raptors or the Wizards, I feel like that's at least they took two games. It was a hard fought series at that point. And I can totally understand them losing, because it's basketball's kind of a wild sport and things will happen in the game, but at least six games shows that it's kind of hard fought. But anything more than that is gravy. Anything less than that is disappointing. And of course you want to see them win more, but in terms of that franchise trajectory, no, these games like this, it's not the biggest deal in the world.
Yeah. I can kind of get on board with that. I think that if the Celtics remain healthy and nothing weird happens, like nobody gets hurt, they should get past the first round. If a fully healthy Celtics team loses in the first round of the NBA playoffs this year, then my tone will completely change. There are serious questions to ask of this team. If they're fully healthy and they can't adjust from Isaiah Thomas getting blitzed and they can't figure out how to handle that, if Al Horford has a bad playoffs and the Celtics, a healthy Celtics team, I'm hammering that home for a reason. If a healthy Celtics team can't go and beat the Bulls or Pacers or Heat, then that would, let me see. I don't know. Maybe Miami got eliminated. I'm not 100% sure, but whatever it is, if they can't beat their first round matchup fully healthy, then that really does actually bring up some legitimate questions. I don't think the past criticism of the Celtics and their playoffs, I don't think that's legitimate. I don't think that narrative is right. Because, again, 2 years ago, that was the Isaiah Thomas trade. And Isaiah came in, and they won games that they really didn't want to win, but they did it. They got to the playoffs. They were a sub-500 team. They got to the playoffs. They got swept by the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's not an issue for me. Last year, again, I'll reiterate, they went to six games against the Hawks, injured, undermanned, and really still in year three, 2 years removed from they won 20-something games. So this year, though, 51 wins. At this point, if they are fully healthy and they go and they lose to one of these other teams, that's a big problem for me. But if they get into the second round and have a competitive series against Toronto or Washington, I think that's all you can expect. And if they lose to Toronto, if they lose to Washington, they play well, and they have a hard-fought series and they lose, that's okay to me. I'm not upset about that. Like, I won't like it, but I still think the season is a success at that point.
Yeah, I think the narrative is like, oh, if they were to lose, that this Celtics team can't, like, Brad Stevens can't take a team past the first round, is absolutely idiotic for the context you mentioned before. If they lose in the first round this year, the story should be this specific Celtics team, the makeup of this specific Celtics team, was disappointing. But to connect it to years prior and saying, like, this coach can't do this, or is like, you know, Brad Stevens really chokes in the playoffs. I mean, it kind of ties back to, like, what we were saying earlier about the playoff mentality and how it really, like, comes down to what the players are doing. If this Celtics team does not make it out of the first round, it's not a failure of the Celtics, I guess, franchise culture or Brad Stevens' coaching career. It's a failure of the hopefully only 8 to 9 players who made it on the court, and those guys disappointed. But I'm with you in just rejecting this whole idea is like, oh, they've never won a first round series under Brad Stevens. No, that's just a stupid thing, like a stupid type of analysis. And I agree with you that you hope for them to get into the second round. I think they have the potential to make the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think the kind of threshold is just having a competitive series with whoever their second round opponent is.
Yeah. Today in the Globe, Dan Shaughnessy said it would be a miracle if they made it to the conference finals. Well, Shaughnessy is a troll, and he's adjusted very nicely from being a very good columnist in the newspaper era to being a really good troll in the internet era. I want to give him a little bit of props. This is a backhanded compliment because it is an insult at the same time that to have morphed into an internet troll so quickly demonstrates a very good grasp of the worst of the internet. But
he knows his market.
He definitely does. He's really, really good at what he does. He was a fantastic columnist. He was really, really great at what he did. But now he's just a troll with good writing ability. And so he basically had said that it's a miracle if they get to the conference finals. It's not a miracle if they get to the conference finals. It's a very plausible thing for them to get there.
Especially if they play the Wizards, who they've played well this entire year.
If they have home court against the Wizards, they have not lost at home against the Wizards. They play well. Wizards are a very flawed team themselves. That would be absolutely, I think, any NBA observer would sit there and say, well, if the Celtics played the Wizards, if either team advanced, no one would be surprised. I think either team has equal chance of, or close to equal chance of advancing. It's not a big thing. I think once you get past Cleveland, I guess recently, if you look at what Cleveland's done recently, they're not so far up in a head and shoulders above everybody else. But beyond that, Toronto, Boston, Washington, they're all flawed teams. So any one of those teams can make it to the conference finals or the NBA finals for that matter. So we'll just leave it at that for now. There's a lot more talk as we get closer to the playoffs. We have a couple more games left in the season. We've got a few more podcasts to get into the whole big picture. So we'll be talking a lot more about the chances here. Let's touch on briefly before we wrap things up about the new news that the NBA salary cap is going to be a little bit lower than we thought, which is interesting because the revenue projections are lower than we expected, which means really that they're still really awesome, just not quite as really awesome as we thought, because the salary cap is still at $101 million. But it's a little bit less than what the Celtics were kind of working on, which means if we get what we want, which is a top two pick, the automatic slotting, because those salaries are predetermined, those guys are going to make enough money where getting a max guy is going to be just a tiny bit more interesting than we thought. If they go out, if they're going to pursue a Gordon Hayward, let's say, he has kind of emerged as the guy that we're pursuing. If they're going to go get that guy, to get him, they're going to have to make some really, really hard decisions. So it's kind of interesting to see the dynamic of who is on this team now, who will be fighting for this team in this playoff run that we've been talking about, and who's going to be here when the Celtics become true contenders.
Yeah, because it makes things a whole lot more complicated in terms of now the Celtics no longer can keep the entire team, the core intact, and add someone, a max free agent like Gordon Hayward. If they want to bring in someone like that, they'd basically have to renounce Kelly Olynyk and all the other free agents, and then still would have to trade someone like Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley to bring in match salaries. And it's just an interesting dynamic. And this summer is going to be really interesting in terms of the Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart kind of conundrum, because those guys will all be a year away from their contract years. And eventually the Celtics are going to, it feels like they're going to have to choose two of the three or part ways with one of them. So I don't know if it's the, if it's directly going to happen because they're bringing in someone like Gordon Hayward, but just if that's the solution they want to go with, one of those guys has to be out of town. And I feel like, I don't know who would be easier to deal, Avery Bradley at this point or Marcus Smart. Avery Bradley is clearly a much more polished player, but it feels like he's going to be demanding a lot more money. It's just interesting for the Celtics because you, at some point this season, we had this these dreams of we could get a max player and the number one pick, and this just makes things a lot harder. So if you're dreaming about adding Gordon Hayward, the Celtics team would actually have to look a lot different. And then there's all this also thing with Gordon Hayward where all these crazy people in Salt Lake City are donating their hard-earned money just to put up a billboard to try and get him to stay. It feels like the Celtics fans are just think, oh, well, yeah, the Celtics have that cap space, so they're just going to go out and get a max-level player. But say Blake Griffin re-signs and Gordon Hayward re-signs, then the Celtics have, like, almost max space, but not the players to target. What do you do then? Are you, like, do they need to make a deal at that point because they can't upgrade in talent? I think it just makes this upcoming offseason all the more interesting because there's not as clear a path to kind of that super team that they wanted to create. So it's going to be interesting to see what Danny Ainge does.
Yeah, I think
figure it out.
I think there's a couple of things. Is that one, the Celtics front office has always been able to do stuff that neither of us or any of us can see. They do things that you say, oh, wow, I didn't realize that was a mechanism of the collective bargaining agreement. I'm not smart enough to look into that and understand that that's a repercussion. So I'm kind of waiting for Mike Zarin and those guys to kind of come up with that thing. You go, oh, right. I wish I'd known to look for that little loophole. So that's one. Two is I think that we just kind of have to understand that guys are going to have to go. Like, this is just not going to be the finished product. And Marcus Smart and or Avery Bradley, they're just going to have to go. One of those guys will probably not be on the Celtics next season. And when you look at it, you have Avery Bradley on one side who has a history of getting hurt. And I don't want to say injury prone, but at the same time, he just keeps having all these different weird unrelated injuries. So maybe he is injury prone. Marcus Smart has missed time, but he's this bulldog that goes out there and plays great, but also shoots like complete shit so often. It's hard to sit there and say, I want to have a 20-something percent shooter on my team when Avery Bradley can do what he does. You have to figure out, do you want to pay Avery Bradley or do you want to pay Marcus Smart? So a lot of tough decisions are going to have to be made, but this team is going to have to be completely remade moving forward using, it's almost like a little bit of a teardown. You have your studs literally and figuratively, like the studs, the weight bearing portions of the wall in a house. And you have your studs, the guys who perform for you on the team that you have to build around. Like, those guys are going to still be here. And if they're going to go for a guy like Hayward or whomever,
They have to cut some guys loose. Here's the other thing. Cap space doesn't necessarily mean signing guys. It does also include the possibility of making an unbalanced trade where a team that has a guy that they might want to get rid of and they don't want to take back a bunch of salary, they'll look for a team like the Celtics to be able to acquire a guy in their cap space without having to take back all of that money. So those teams, those capped out teams like the Clippers, might want to deal with the Boston Celtics and say, hey, here's an unbalanced trade. The Celtics cap space can mean more than just the amount of the size of the hole to put a player that you sign into. So there are other options. There are other options for the Boston Celtics. And another option for them is to use that cap space to renegotiate and extend to make sure they keep Isaiah Thomas, to make sure they keep Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder. Like, that's another option. So they can make other deals and they could draft to fill in holes. Maybe that extends things for a year or two, but they could keep veterans long term and have younger players. It's just an option. It's just, in the end, the Celtics at least have options. And yeah, this is not great news to have it be $101 million versus $103, $104, $105. But at least the Celtics have options, which is actually a really good place to be.
Oh, yeah. They just have a little bit less amount of options given these numbers, but they're still in a very good place. The thing that I was thinking about, and it kind of ties back to how far the Celtics go this year, is Isaiah Thomas and his max contract that he is going to be coming up. If the Celtics, one, get a top pick and draft someone like Markelle Fultz, and then two, get like knocked out of the first round due to a kind of an inability for them to score, when there's Isaiah really struggles with the kind of the similar things where the Celtics offense doesn't know what to do when he's getting blitzed. Does that make him less likely of the Celtics to max him out or extend him when he's up as a free agent? Just because Do you reach the conclusion that maybe he's not the type of player you can build around in the play, like, to win you a playoff series, and then you would also have someone who plays his position and is supposed to be a star on your roster for cheaper?
Man, we can get into what to do with Isaiah Thomas for an entire episode in the offseason, which we should.
And we will. Tune into June.
We will absolutely do that. Because it's a legitimate, nuanced discussion. There's so much with Isaiah, because the dude just put up the fifth best scoring season in Celtics history. And if he had played all 82 games at his current average, he would have had the best scoring season in NBA history, in Celtics history, I should say. So he is an unbelievably important dynamic player to the Boston Celtics. But there is still a question about his size. There's still a question about his durability. And guys his size tend to not have the durability. But he is also a bit of a freak. He's also super strong. He's become more durable. So, what do you do with him long term? I don't know. I really don't know.
It's a crazy question. Like, especially if you draft a point guard there too, it's like,
right.
maybe if you didn't have that pick, you'd be more inclined to kind of max him out, because then you have what you know your point guard is going to be. But if you have someone with the talent of Lonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz and that potential.
But
maybe you make a crazy decision and kind of blow it up again.
But in today's NBA, what do we all value?
positional versatility. Why wouldn't you want to have two guys that can play either position together? Why do you have to have a point guard and a shooting guard? Why can't you have... I know like 10 years ago, this would have been just the worst discussion to have. Like, oh shit, what do we do here? But it's a new dynamic. It's a new NBA. Why can't we sit there and say, why not have Isaiah and Markelle Fultz in the same backcourt? What's preventing that? Why can't two guys bring the ball up and play off of each other and shoot and pass? What's wrong with that? You got two guys that do awesome things, and they can if they can both shoot the three, and if they can both dribble and penetrate, like, that's what you want. You want guys that can do all of these things on the team together, because when you have three or four guys that can all shoot the three and who can all put the ball on the floor and penetrate and who can all pass, who the hell do you guard? That's exactly what today's NBA is. So why wouldn't you want Isaiah and Fultz and Crowder and Horford? They can all do those things to varying degrees. That makes the Celtics impossible to guard. So I come from more old school place than you, because I'm a little more old school than you.
But, I would say so.
You didn't have to agree so quickly. But today's NBA, if we're going to really appreciate what today's NBA is, to have a bunch of guys who can shoot, a bunch of guys who can dribble, a bunch of guys who can pass, that's what you want as an NBA team. And especially if those guys can play defense and have some sort of ability to switch on the defensive end, if Fultz can be a defensive player, if he can grow into some level of NBA defensive viability alongside those guys, and you can bring either Smart or Bradley off the bench to add to that, you really have something there. And it's really up to the players at that point. Does Isaiah want to sign long term to be a part of that, or does he not? And so I don't see Fultz necessarily as a negative. I see Ball a little bit more as a negative, because I question whether he can shoot at the NBA level. That little sidewinding thing that he does is, I don't know how that's going to translate. But to have Fultz as a legitimate shooter slash passer, and he's an exceptional passer, I think a guy like that, I think that can work for the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that by drafting one of them, it immediately means that you have to run Isaiah out of town. I think there's definitely a world in which they can play together, especially because Fultz and Ball they're both larger or bigger guards, so they really shouldn't have issues. I think Fultz is 6'4", Lonzo Ball is 6'6". They shouldn't have issues guarding shooting guards. I think that would be like a major issue if you brought in another point guard under 6 feet. It would really be difficult to put that player and Isaiah on the same court. But given their size of the Fultz and Ball, I don't think it means there's enough room in that backcourt for Isaiah and whoever that person drafts, just because those players are both great passers, and Isaiah plays so well off the ball to begin with. You kind of give him more playmaking around him, and you feel like it would just expand the offense. So I would agree that definitely not a bad thing to be able to add one of the top two picks in the draft.
No.
So I don't think we've gotten ahead of ourselves, but it's going to be an interesting offseason, because the Celtics are going to need to do something with their roster, and it's going to look a whole lot different at the start of 2017, and that's going to happen no matter how well they do in the playoffs.
Yep.
Like, I feel like if they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, they're still going to make some wild changes, because that's kind of Danny Ainge's approach. And maybe they'll be more aggressive after a first-round loss, but I think Danny's looking to kind of make that big transformational trade or move no matter what happens. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to this offseason.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun. But we have, in the immediate future, two more regular season games. The Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks. And we'll see. The Celtics could end up being the top seed still after everything. Even after that crazy loss to the Cavaliers, they could still be the top seed. They should be no worse than the second seed. They're guaranteed to be no worse than the third seed. We will be here to talk about it and get us into the playoffs. The playoffs are here, people. I can't believe it that the season is over, but it's over in a couple of days. So we'll be here to talk about it Monday through Friday. Thank you. If you are a subscriber, I want to thank you for being a regular subscriber. If you are not, I would encourage you to do so, so you can get these shows on your phone or your mobile device, wherever it is you're listening to your podcast. It will be there without any delay. It'll just be there ready for you to listen to in the car, at the gym, at work, when you're trying to pretend that you're doing something, but you're not. I'm happy to be your distraction. As long as I don't get you fired, just let's all work together on this. But however it is that you listen to your podcast, subscribe. If you are a subscriber and you have not rated us, please rate us 5 stars. Leave us a good review. I don't ask you to do that enough, but leave us a review and let people know why you like the show. Let people know that the show is entertaining for you, informative for you, whatever it is. Let them know so other people can discover us and find us and also subscribe. Really, we're just trying to pump up the numbers. We're trying to compete with, really honestly, we're trying to compete with those jerks on regular radio. And they have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people listening to them on a daily basis. They're being misinformed. We are here on a daily basis. We've got a few thousand people who listen to us. We need more. We need to make sure that those people get good information. So please rate us and leave a review and spread the word. Okay, that's the show. Thanks for listening. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.